Okay, we're getting here on the middle of Mem Vav and Aleph with the new Perek. New Perek is going to deal with the issues of Bechor and the fact that there are different types of Bechor. There's a Bechor in the Nachla, which is the firstborn who's entitled to the double portion. There's also a Bechor the Kohen, the firstborn who is Kadosh and needs to be redeemed. The qualifications for each of them is actually different. And what's what the Mishnah sets out to highlight here is the differences between these two types of Bechorim. If you have a Bechor the Nachla, Bechor the Kohen, the Mishnah is actually going to go through four different possibilities, four permutations about the status of a fetus that's born, and highlight through that the differences and the similarities between these two. So that's what the Mishnah starts out with, is Yesh Bechor the Nachla, Veinu Bechor the Kohen. There are certain instances where the child will be a firstborn with regards to the Yerusha, but he will not be a firstborn with regards to the Kohen. Bechor the Kohen, Veinu Bechor the Nachla. There are some instances where the child will be a Bechor with regards to Pidyon HaBen, but he will not be a Bechor, a firstborn with regards to Nachla, the inheritance. Bechor the Nachla, Ulu Kohen. There are instances where the child will be a Bechor for both. And there are instances where he's neither a Bechor l'Nachla nor a Bechor l'Kohen. So the Mishnah now will deal with two of those scenarios, which is Ezu Bechor l'Nachla ve'enu Bechor l'Kohen. What are the instances where the child is a Bechor l'Nachla but not a Bechor l'Kohen? Haba achar nifelim. So this is a child that is born after a miscarriage, even if his head came out while it was still alive. Now the scenario that Rashi places over here seems to be an impossible scenario, which is that you have twins inside the mother's womb. One of the twins has reached the point of gestation, the other one has not reached the point of gestation. So the nefel, the one who hasn't reached kalucha deshav, has not reached the point of a full term birth, sticks its head out, pulls it back in, and then the other child, who is completed the 9th month period, then comes out first. So in that case, the din will be that is a Bechor the Nachla, but not a Bechor the Kohen. Because Peter Rechem is the determination for Bechor the Kohen, the first one through the womb. That Nefel, because it stuck its head out, and its head was alive when it exited, therefore, it's kiyulot. It was as if it was born. Once it pulls back in, then it doesn't have a din of Bechor l'Nachla, because Bechor l'Nachla has to be a viable child, has to be something that libo shel aviv davalav, that father's heart is drawn after. Since it wasn't kalulo chadashav, since it was yet to complete its term, therefore when it stuck its head out, it wasn't considered a birth of a viable baby, and it's not a Bechor l'Nachla. So before the Kohen, it was a Peter Rechem. As far as the Nachla, it was not a Bechor l'Nachla. Uben Tisha Shiatza Rosho Mate. Now, if the child had reached the full 9 month term, and its head exited when it was a stillborn, that also will be classified as the Peter Rechem, but will not be classified as the Bechor l'Nachla. Right, I just mentioned the requirement for Bechor l'Nachla, we'll mention it again, is that it has to be Libo shel aviv davalav, that his father's heart is drawn after him, and it has to be something that's somewhat viable, and we're going to see in the Gemara the other requirement might be Yakir. It has to be identifiable, has to be visible. So over here again, you have the Ben Tisha Shiatza Rosho Mate. The Ben Tisha stuck out its head when it was already Niftar, dead, it was a stillborn. That's a Peter Rechem because it exited through the womb, the first thing to exit the womb, even though it's dead, because there's no requirement of a live birth. The only requirement is Peter Rechem. And by the Bechor Nachla, it will not qualify, obviously, because this isn't something that the father's heart is drawn after. These are two examples of a case of someone that would be one would be a Bechor the Kohen, and one would be a Bechor the Nachla. The Bechor l'Kohen is either the live fetus that had its head exit, or the dead fetus that had completed its full term and had its head exit. That will take care of the Bechor l'Kohen. Bechor l'Nachla will be the child that exits afterwards. If the woman discharged a miscarriage that looks like an animal, a bird, then that would be considered a Peter Rechem according to Divrei Rabbi Meir. From Yomari, Majebo Mitzurat Adam. That unless it has the form of a person, then it's not classified as a miscarriage, that is a peterechem. In order to be a peterechem, it has to actually have a human tzura, human form to it. Sandal, o shalia, o shafir meukam, yotzei mechutach, bachariyem, bechor lanachala, ve'im bechor lekohen. So for all of these instances, sandal, Rashi explains, is a fetus, a miscarriage, that is missing tzurat panim, has a human form, but it's missing the facial features. Shalia is the afterbirth, the placenta, which comes out, and we know that ein shalia below vlad. Shalia is an indication of a vlad, of a fetus there, and even though we don't see the fetus, we assume that the fetus exited or was crushed and exited. Oh, shafir mirukam, Rashi explains, or mamashel vlad, it's the skin of the vlad. Mirukam, the Gemara Nida discusses exactly what that means, meaning that it's obviously not the full form of a fetus, but it has features or indications to us that there is a fetus here. We would say mechutach, or a baby that was taken out, ever, piece by piece. In these instances, a bachareyem is b'chor l'nachla, and one that comes after them is the b'chor l'nachla, because none of these are viable babies, but ain't b'chor l'kohen, but all of them are peterechem. So even though they're not viable, but they are peterechem, in the case of mechutach, you have to have rov of the evarim that come out, because we don't know where the head is, and therefore when it's mechutach, you have to get the rov of the baby has to be born. There are two qualifications, we're going to see this in the Gemara, in terms of birth. Birth is either by the head coming out, or the rov of the baby has exited. So in a case where we know the head is, where the head is, then that's what we saw in the first part of this, part of the Mishnah, that Yetzar Rosho Chai or Yetzar Rosho Meit, that's considered a full birth. On the other hand, when we don't have the indications of where the head is, when a case of Mechutach was cut up into pieces, then the birth is determined by the rove. The rove is an indication that there was a birth here, so for whatever reason, one or two Evarim came out, and then the other baby exited, that would be enough to be both the Bechor the Kohen and Bechor the Nachala. You have to have the Yetzar HaRov. Now Rashi, that's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot just notes that there is a machloket amoraim in this instance, that there is a shita of Rabbi Yochanan, that even a mechutach, even if it comes out piecemeal, if the rosh comes out, that's considered a birth. There is that day. Rashi is just explaining it according to the Amoru, who says that when it comes out mechutach, the only way for it to be considered a birth is if the rove exits, not if the head exits in this case. So all of these cases, as the Mishnah says, is a Bechor, the Kohen, all those fetuses that exited, and therefore the one who comes after them is not a Bechor, the Kohen, but will be a Bechor, the Nachla, he will take Pishnayim. He will take the double portion in terms of the inheritance. Me, Shelo Ayugo Banim. A father who never had children. V'nasa Isha, Shekvar Yalda. But he married a woman who had already given birth. Here you have another issue that comes up in Bechor. Bechor, the Kohen, is determined by the Peterechem, by the mother. The Bechor l'Nachla is determined by the father. So since the child is the firstborn to the father, but not the firstborn to the mother, this child will be a Bechor l'Nachla, but not a Bechor l'Kohen. Uda Shivcha, v'nishtachara, she became impregnated while she was still a Shivcha, and then she was freed. Ovedet Ovedet Kochavim, she had a child while she was still an Ovedet Kochavim, Vinit Gaira, and then she converted. Shivcha Kananit, or an Ovedet Kochavim already had a child while they were a Shivcha Kananit, or an Ovedet Kochavim. So then the Shivcha was Nishtachura, or the Ovedet Kochavim was Nit Gaira, converted. Mishabat Yisrael wants to become full-fledged Jews. Yalda, if she gives birth there, Yabachor L'Nachla, that'll be the firstborn Bi Yisrael. So that'll be, in terms of inheritance, that's when it'll start. Ve'ein Bechor L'Kohen, but it's not a Bechor L'Kohen because you need Peterechem. And the Peterechem, while she was either a Shivcha or an Ovedet Kochavim, eliminates the ability to have a Peterechem when she joins Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, Bechor L'Nachla has to do with the firstborn in Israel while he was Jewish, because Nachla only has implications or meaning within Klal Yisrael. It's not while prior to that point in time. So therefore, this child again will be a Bechor L'Nachla, but not a Bechor the Kohen. Yossi Galil, Omer Bechor L'Nachla, Udo Kohen. He believes that this qualification of being a Yisrael applies not only to the Nachla, but also to the Kohen, Shinemar, Peterechem be Yisrael. Ad Shifteru Rechem mi Yisrael. Peterechem be Yisrael means the first to exit the womb while she was Jewish. So that would, according to Rabbi Yossi Galili, make these children both Bechorim lenachala, as well as bechor lekohen. Misha yulo banim venasa isha. Now we've switched over. That was the end of the grouping of individuals who are a bechor lenachala, but not a bechor lekohen. Now we are shifting over to instances where you have a bechor lekohen, but not a bechor lenachala. Misha yulo banim. He had children already. The father. And he married a woman who had yet to give birth. So in this case, he had children, so the nachala is already taken care of. The firstborn in terms of nachala is done. She could have a peterechem, and therefore it could be a bechor lekohen without being a bechor lenachala. Nitgaira mi'uberet. She converts while she is pregnant. Nishtachara mi'uberet. The shivka kananit is freed while she is pregnant. Ve'yalda. And then she gives birth. So in this case, it's a Bechor LeKohen, because you do have Peter Rechem B'Yisrael. The determining point of time is Peter Rechem. Peter Rechem will happen when she is already either freed or she's already Israelite. And because of that, it will be a Bechor LeKohen. In terms of the Nachla, it will not be, as Rashi points out over here, because Horatan Shelo B'Kedusha. They were conceived when they were not Kadosh. And because of that, La Bar Nachla Hu, because the Obdei Kochavim and Shvachot and Avadim do not have a din in Nachala. So since the conception was done Shlo B'Kedusha, the issue of Nachala will not be over here. Rashi over here claims that Ubala Ima, when she converted, her husband converted as well. And not only did the woman convert, but the man converted as well. So therefore, the chiddush is that even though the man converted, he's still not considered to be a bechor lenachala, because horatan shelo b'kedusha, because the conception happened when they were not Jewish. Right. The outcome is the same, but it's just a bigger chiddush that even though the father converted, and this firstborn is his firstborn while he is a Jew, it will not count because the conception happened prior to his being Jewish. Had he not converted, then it would be no question about Bechor Lenachala. So his conversion doesn't help the situation, doesn't improve the situation. Rashi and Tosafot disagree about why. Rashi talks about the issue of the Zera Mitzri Rachmana Achkarei, that the Zera is not considered to be a real Zera. As Tosafot explains,
because Ger Shenit Gayer Kekatan Shenolad Dami.
Next is, he Vikohenet. They both have children. She, as well as a Kohenet, has a child. He, Vilevia. She and a Levia have a child. He, Vishash Kvarielda. She, along with another woman who already gave birth. So in all of these instances, what ended up happening was that the children got mixed up. When the children got mixed up, we don't know whose child that you have at this point. So you don't know whose child it is. In terms of Bechor Lenachala, you can't have a Bechor Lenachla here because they don't have a definitive claim on the Yerusha. If they come to make a claim, the person will say, prove to us that you are the son of this father. So since that's the case, we can't have him make a demand in terms of Nachla. But in terms of Bechor LeKohen, he will be a Bechor LeKohen because no matter where the child is, he's Chayav the 5 shekel. Meaning that one of these children is Patur, one of them is Chayav. A Kohen, or a Kohenet that has a child, and a Leviat that has a child, are Patur mi Pidyon ha-ben. So Ben Yodua is a Bechor LeKohen. We don't know which one of these two is the Bechor LeKohen. And the Ravuto Kamashvan Rashi says, the Chiddush here is, the Bala Shom Mivakaret, the one who's the husband of a woman who's giving birth for the first time, and is Chayav in the Heislaim Kohen. Because no matter what, she did have a Ben HaZachar here. She definitely had a male child that was born here, that was a firstborn. And therefore, he's chayav in terms of the pidyon haben, but in terms of nachla, that we can't tell which one is which child, and therefore for nachla, he doesn't have a definitive claim to come and make a claim. So even if they keep one of the two children, and we're just not certain that that's the child, he'll be chayav to the kohen, because no matter where the child is, he's chayav in the pidyon haben. But in terms of nachla, they don't have a full-fledged claim, because they will say, amotzi mechaver l'avaraya, the other brothers say to him, prove to us that you really are the child of this father. V'chein. Mi shlosh atal achar balah shlosha chodoshim. Woman who remarried within 3 months. V'niseit v'yalda. And then she gives birth. V'ein yodum ben tisha l'rishon im ben shiv'a l'achron. We're uncertain as to whether it's a 9-month child to the first husband, or it's a 7th-month child from the second husband. So there it's a Bechor LeKohen again, because this is her first child, and therefore it's a Peter Rechem, Ve'enu b'kor l'nachala. And he's not a b'kor l'nachala. Over here, he'll get pushed out of the Yerusha from both sides. Meaning that neither sets of brothers will allow him to have Yerusha, because they'll say, you're the child of the other father. So you don't belong here. So you will get no Yerusha, because he will not be able to prove that he's a son of this either father. In terms of Pidyon HaBen, we cannot obligate either of the fathers to pay, because each father will say, no, it belongs to the other father, and I do not have to pay it. He will have to redeem himself. He's definitely a Bechor, and he'll have to redeem himself, because we can't obligate either of the fathers to pay, because we don't know which of the two fathers is really the father. When he gets old enough, he'll have to do a Pidyon HaBen on himself. He'll wait till he's of age, and he will then redeem himself in the Pidyon HaBen. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel makes a statement here. Ein Arosh Poter Benifelim. When it comes to miscarriages, the Rosh is not a determinant of birth. So for instance, a Ben Shmona, 8 months, a baby that's reached 8 months in term, sticks its head out while it's alive, and then pulls it back in, Ve'kadmo Achiv, and then his brother shoots out before him. According to Shmuel, he'll be a Bechor LeKohen, and a Bechor LeNachala, because that's not classified as a birth. My time, huh? What's the reasoning of Shmuel? Kol asher nishmat ruach chaim be'apav. So here, this is dealing with Noach and the Mabul, that which will be destroyed. It's kol asher nishmat ruach chaim be'apav. So now, the literal translation of pav is nostrils, his nose. So anything that has the breath of life in its nose, or in its nostrils, will be destroyed. But as Rashi points out here, apav can be read in certain instances to mean his face, not just his nose. So the way that Shmuel is reading it here is kol asher nishmat ruach chaim be'apav. Anything that has life in its face. When someone has a life force, has the breath of life, be'apav, in its face, then they are considered to be reshe. That's considered to be his head, or his face here. Rashi is using them loosely as being face and head. And therefore, it's not considered to be a birth, unless the head comes out and it's a viable fetus. Idach, if it doesn't have that viability, it doesn't have nishmat ruach chaim, lo chashiv reshe, then it's not considered to be a birth or a head. It's not a head in terms of birth. So what Shmuel says over here is that the head being a birth is only when you have a viable baby. Obviously, the obvious question is going to be asked on him is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, which states before that, haba achar nefelim, tnan, haba achar nefelim, shiatza rosho chai, who came after a miscarriage, whose head exited while he was still alive, or something that came to full term, whose head came out while they were stillborn, you see that both of them say Rosho, Rosho, and it's classified as a birth. In neither of these cases is it a viable baby. The first one's not viable because it's a nafel, it's preterm, and the second one because its head came out when it was already dead. Yet our Mishnah says that Tani Mia Rosho. It's saying that it is Rosho. Rosho is the qualification in our Mishnah. Akut Shmuel claim the Rosh is not sufficient. So my answer is my Rosho, Rubo. Rosho doesn't literally mean the head came out, but Rubo. When it says Vilitne Rubo, then the Mishnah should have written Rov. Why would you write Rosh if you meant Rov? The alternative, which we mentioned before, to birth being with the head, is if the Rov of the fetus exits. There's two options for birth. Either the head exits, or the robe of the fetus exits. So here, Shmuel is saying that in our mission, when it says Rosho, it does not literally mean that the head exited, but rather, the robe of the fetus exited. So the man says, okay, then write that. So he says, Vidinu, di bailime mitne rubo. You're right. The mission should have written rubo. Because in the seifa, it had to write that it's a 9-month-old stillborn, whose head exited, that's considered to be a birth. Taima, derosho mate. Because the diuk that we're going to draw out of there is that because it was dead. Harosho chai, had it been alive, haba acharav, b'chor l'nachala, nami lo havi. Then the one that comes after him will just not be a b'chor l'peterechem, will also not be a b'chor l'nachala. That is the story from the Parshiot we just read. That's Peretz and Zarach. That you had the twins inside of Tamar. The first one exits and then retracts, goes back in, and then the second one comes out. So over there was just the hand that exited. The question of whether the head exited or not. But the determination of Bechor then would have been, if the head exited, it was alive, then it's retracted, and the other baby comes out. That first one whose head came out while it was alive is both the Bechor the Kohen and the Bechor the Nachala. Both. So the diuk out of our Mishnah is because Rosho mate. The only reason that in our Mishnah it's classified to be a Bechor the Kohen and not the Bechor the Nachala is because it exited as a stillborn. The diuk we make is that had it not been a stillborn, it would have been both a Bechor the Nachala and Bechor the Kohen. That's the diuk in the Seifa. So the reason I have to write Rosho in the Seifa is because of this diuk. But once I wrote Rosho in the Seifa, Tananami Resha Rosho. It also wrote in the Resha is Rosho. Even though in both these cases, we don't want to take Rosh literally. Both in the Resha and the Seifa, the Rosho we don't want to take literally because it really means Rubo. Rosh will make no difference in either of these cases. You need Rov to exit in terms of being a Bechor le Nachala. And for Shmuel, that would be even for Bechor le Kohen. But, because we wanted to make a deal out of the Seifa, that only when it's a stillborn is this true, but if it had been a live head that came out when it reached full term, that would wipe everything out. He'd be before the Kohen, before the Nachala, and whoever came after him would be a zero. Because of that deal, we used the term Rosho in the Mishnah, even though it really meant Rubo. Gemara says, Maika Mashmalan. So then what is the deal that you're learning out of this Mishnah? The deal that Shmuel is saying that our Mishnah is teaching us is, the kaven de mafik le reshei habaleida, that the fact that the head exited is considered a birth. Tanina, we have Mishnayot that already tell us this. Hayud hotzi rosho, afo pishiyak zero, arizeki yubod. This is actually from Chulin, from the cases of ben bikua. If you shecht when there's a fetus inside the mother, the shechting of the mother takes care of the fetus. So over here, the fetus stuck its head out and then retracted it, and you shechted the mother. That is considered to be a full birth, and therefore the shkita of the mother will not cover this baby. You see that the exiting of the head is considered to be a birth. So what are you going to say? Ashmiyunin behema. That's by animals. And over here, kamash v'lan ba'adam. And over here, sikai is about human beings. By animals, that's considered a birth. That's the Mishnah in Chulin. The Mishnah over here, the deal for the Mishnah is teaching us by human beings that also the head is a birth. Ta'adam be'mehema lo yadlif, because we won't learn out human beings from an animal. Delayt la prusdor, because there is no birth canal. When it comes to a animal, there is no birth canal. So I would have thought, by an animal, the exiting of the head is considered a birth, because there is, that's it, it's out. Whereas by the woman, we would suggest that maybe the exiting of the head is not enough. Because of the prusdor, Tosfot over here explains that prusdor is not necessarily the birth canal, but the thighs of the woman, that the thighs of the woman are blocking the visibility of the head, and therefore it may not be classified as a birth, even when the head exits. So therefore, just because I know it by behemoth doesn't mean I know it by Adam. And behemoth me Adam lo yalfa. And I wouldn't have learned that. Had you written it by human beings, I wouldn't have known it by behemoth. Bishom, techashim patsuk panim didei. Because by human beings, the face is significant. That's how you identify people by their faces. So therefore, I have a Mishnah over here that tells me about human beings, and I still need the Mishnah in Chulin to tell me about Behema. Just because a human being's head is significant doesn't mean that the animal's head is significant. So I need both of them. Gemara says about that, Hanami Tanina. We already have a Mishnah that tells about human beings as well. The Mishnah in Chulin tells us about Behemoth. You're claiming that our Mishnah here is telling us about human beings. We also have a Mishnah in Nidot that already tells us that din of human beings. Yatzake Dartko. If the baby is born in normal fashion, that once the rove of the head exits, that is considered to be a birth. Vezu rove rosho. What is the rove of the rosh? Once the forehead is exited, the rove of the rosh is now exited, and it's considered to be a birth. So now I have a Mishnah in Chulin that tells me that a head of a behema is considered to be a birth. I have a Mishnah in Nida that tells me a human being's head is considered a birth. What do I need the Mishnah here to tell me that information? Why do I need a diuk in this Mishnah? Tiyufta de Shmuel tiyufta. That makes it very difficult for Shmuel. This upends Shmuel's position because Shmuel will have to retract his position because he can't explain our Mishnah. Our Mishnah that uses the term Rosho will have to be literal. Why does it use Rosho? Because Rosho is considered a birth, and meaning if Rosho is considered a birth, that means even B'nai Feilim. That's the example in our Mishnah. The Reisha Mishnah says, even by a fetus that has not come to full term, the Rosh is considered to be a birth. That's against Shmuel's position, and that's the only way to explain our Mishnah, because you don't have an alternative to explain the Mishnah. Originally, Shmuel wanted to make it as a diok out of the Seifa, but now we just lost that. That we have an explicit Mishnah Ida, explicit Mishnah in Chulin. I don't need that diok. If I don't need the diok, then it's not necessary, and that means that Rosho is literal. So that'll be a problem for Shmuel. Now, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Padachat poteret b'chol makom chutz min anachala. Shimon ben Lakish makes a statement. It says, that which we said in Mishnah Nida, that the birth of the baby, the head going out, is enough or sufficient to be considered a birth, that works everywhere, when all dinim, except for nachala, except for inheritance. My time, oh, because the reason is that in Parshat Ki Teitzeh, when it talks about nachala, it says, here, letet lo pishnaim, that he has to recognize, he will give, over there, yakir, means that he will favor that child to give him the double portion. The Gemara is reading yakir, mean literally that the father has to recognize the child. Yakir amar rachmano, the pasuk says that he has to recognize the child. The demand for recognition means that you need more than the forehead. Because we'll see in a second that the only way to identify a person or a fetus is that you need their nose as well. That it's not enough to have the forehead in terms of identifying an individual, you need more than that, more features of the face, in order to identify the individual. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu l'nachala. Yochanan says that's not true. That even for nachala, it's enough to have the forehead exit. B'chol makom letuimai. When Rish Lakish says everywhere, it's considered to be a birth, what does he come to include? Letuimai rabbanan. This comes to include this case. Gioret, shiatza padachat vlada. A gioret, she was converting. She was carrying a baby. She was pregnant. And the forehead of the baby exited biota nachrit while she was still not Jewish. And afterwards she converted. She does not have a din of tumatara. She doesn't bring the korban for a leida because the birth is considered to have happened while she was not Jewish. Now this is an amazing case that she was nitkaira. Her conversion is completed at the middle of her birthing process. The Gemara does this in instances. It doesn't necessarily have to be true, the case is, but to show you, these are examples of showing and pushing the envelope, the extreme cases. It's always a way to determine how far the halacha goes or where the pivotal points of the halacha are to bring extreme cases down that not necessarily have to be true, but that are good enough for us to then understand what the information is or what the end of this halacha is. The case is here is that she's Nobet Kochavim, who doesn't have a din in Tumat Hara, doesn't have a din of a Karban Leida. Question is this considered a birth or not? So how do we test the limits? We say that the Padachat, the forehead, came out before she converted, and then the baby was born after she converted. So the Kabbalah told mitzvot, or she went to the mikveh in between. However that happened, we don't know. But whatever that extreme case is, it shows you that Padachat is considered to be a full birth, even though then she was not Jewish, and afterwards the baby's born when she is fully Jewish. So because of that, that's what it means, Reish Lakish says, b'chol bakom, everywhere, that is considered, padachat is considered to be a full birth. So meitave, yakir, when it says yakir, zu hakarat panim, ve'ezuhi hakarat panim, how do we have identification of the face? Patsuf panim imachotam, it has to be the face with the nose. So therefore, this supports the position of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said before that the padachat is not sufficient when it comes to yakir. When it comes to identifying the baby, Reish Lakish said that when it comes to recognizing the baby, that the padachat is not sufficient, you need also the nose. And that's why he said nachla was the exception. Rabbi Yochanan argued and said padachat was sufficient by nachla as well. This goes against Rabbi Yochanan. Over here it's saying that it's be yakir, you need hakarat panim. Hakarat panim is determined by the chotam, by the nose. If that's the case, then it's not only the forehead, but the nose. That supports Reish Lakish's position, not Rabbi Yochanan's position. So what does Rabbi Yochanan do? Tnei ad hachotem. He amends that to read, not including the nose, but until the nose. The question of nose, is it ad v'ad b'klal, or ad v'lo ad b'klal? When we say until the nose, does that mean until the nose, not including the nose? That's how Rabbi Yochanan will read it. Or does it mean the forehead with the nose? And it means to the nose means including the nose. That's the way the pashup shat is to read that. Rabbi Yochanan is amending it to read ad hachotem, meaning that it does not include the chotem, but rather it's to the nose before the nose. Tashma. This is talking about the cases in Yevamot, where a husband goes away, and a woman is left as an aguna, and we need testimony about the woman with regards to the death of her husband. So here it says, imidim elal partsupanim imachotam. You could only identify the husband as being dead if you could testify about the facial features with the nose. What partsufa panim means is unclear. The Rishonim argue whether it means the cheeks or whether it means the mouth and the eyes as well. It's unclear. What we know is it's not the padachat, it's not the forehead. We know that there's one identification as the forehead and the nose. There's another identification which is partsuf panim. What the partsuf panim again is, whether it includes the mouth or it's just the cheekbones, or it's the eyes, that is a machloket rishonim and yevamot of how to determine what exactly the patsuf panim is. But you see here again, the identity requires a chotam, requires the nose. So again, Rabbi Yochanan amends it to read Tnei Adachotem. The Patsuf Panim until the nose. Tashma. Padachat below Patsuf Panim. Patsuf Panim below Padachat. That if the identity is done through a forehead, without the Patsuf Panim, whatever that means, Patsuf Panim below Padachat, Patsuf Panim below Padachat, Imidim Ashishneim Yemachotam. Here it's pretty straightforward. They both have to have the nose. So you have two ways to identify the Niftar. One is the forehead plus the nose. Or the other way to identify him is the facial features with the nose. So those are the two possibilities to identify him, but both of them include the nose. And that's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. V'abarabai v'item ravgana maikrara. What's the pasuk? Hakarat pnehem antabam. It's a pasuk from Yishayahu. Rashi says that the pasuk pshat in the pasuk is that the, very interesting, pashedukra b'noafim k'tiv. It's talking about people who were adultery. Hakarat pnehem ladot. The children that are born, their facial features will testify the fact that this was adultery, because they will look like the father of the child. They were born out of an illicit relationship, but the facial features, the child, will identify for us the fact that this was out of wedlock, or this was illicit, this birth. So therefore, that's why it's called Hakarat Pnehem Antabi. Rashi's point is Alma, that Hakarat Partsuf Pnehem Edutam. That the recognition of the face is testimony. So that's what the way the pasuk reads, based on the pasuk pshat. Now we're just saying that hakarat panim is enough to be considered testimony. That's identification that IDs the individual. Tosafot over here says v'teima that the Gemara in Yevamot brings this pasuk for a different reason. It says pneim antam ba mashma sheish davar badam shemakirim ayado et panim. That's Tosafot says in Yevamot. It says that there's something in the face that allows one to identify the person. That's just the forehead, and not the partsuf panim. So Tosafot says in Yevamot, the Gemara uses this pasuk for a totally different reason, almost disproving exactly what we are just saying here. Over there it says it's sufficient to have, there's a feature in the head, or in the face, that can ID a person. And the Gemara there says that's the padachat, that's the forehead. It's a single feature that can identify it. Over here, the Gemara is using it for the partsuf panim to say that there's a feature that identifies them, and it seems that to be the chotam. That's the answer to your question, Svi, that the akarat panim means there's a certain feature in the face that will help us ID them. What's that feature? The nose. Because whether you have partsuf panim, you still need the nose, and whether you have padachat, you still need the nose. So the way Rashi will read it is that the look of their face is a dut. What is that feature in the face that gives you the dut? That's the nose. That'll be the pivotal point over here. So now Gemara says, Shaini edut isha tachbiru barabbanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that you're talking about edut isha. Edut isha, you're talking about issues of arayot. Over there, we're going to say her husband's dead, allow her to remarry or to perform yibum. Over there, we're going to be very machmir. So over there, we have a higher threshold, a higher standard of identification. That's not true by nachala. When it says, is that really true? By Edut Isha, that we are Machmir, but it's none. We have a Mishnah again in Yevamot that says, Huskuguliot Masim Eid Mipi Eid, Mipi Isha, Mipi Evid, Mipi Shivcha. That we lower the standard of Edut when it comes to the Agunot. And identifying the dead husband, you could do it hearsay, one Eid from another Eid. You could do it from a woman testifying, from an Evid testifying, a Shivcha testifying, all who are not qualified to testify in a normal case. So we've lowered the standard. We're mekil when it comes to the testimony about a freeing a woman because her husband has passed away. Where it says, Ki akilu rabbanan bisofa. When the rabbanan were mekil is bisofa, in the end. Bitchilata lo akilu rabbanan. In the beginning, they were not mekil. Meaning that they raised the bar in terms of IDing the mate. So they raised the bar to say, we're not going to allow you to testify about this individual unless you're certain it's them. But they lowered the bar. Once we have the identification of the individual, they lowered the bar. Who can tell us that information? So they were both machmir and mekil. Machmir in the beginning to make sure that we do have it. We don't want to make a mistake about this. But we lowered the bar so that we won't keep this woman trapped. We lowered the bar about who can tell us this information. That's one way Rabbi Yochanan answers. V'bai deima. The other way for Rabbi Yochanan to answer is yakir lachud v'akar panim lachud. We're dealing about two requirements. Yakir is the requirement by nachala. That's a different standard than Hakarat Panim, which is the standard by IDing a dead husband. If you have to ID a dead husband, that needs Hakarat Panim. So Hakarat Panim is a higher threshold than Yakir. And Rabbi Yochanan will differentiate. You're dealing about two different issues, two different cases. One's a case of Yakir, which is the Nachala, that has the standard that does not require a Chutam. You have a standard by a woman who needs testimony about her husband, that's Hakarat Panim. Hakarat Panim is a higher threshold, and that threshold will be determined by the nose, and I'll agree with you that you'll need the Chutam in that case. But that doesn't tell me you need it by Bechor L'Nachala. So that will stop over here. That's the Machloka between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. In terms of Yakir for Nachala, how much do we need and consider it a birth? Is Padachat sufficient like it is everywhere else? That's Rabbi Yochanan's position. Or is there a higher standard by Nachala, which is Yakir, that you need the Chutam as well, which is the position of Reish Lakish? Okay, we'll stop over here.